going to talk about is tomato packing house wastewater. Some of the stuff that my grad student Maninder Chahal did. She graduated in summer, so I have the privilege to talk about it. What I'm going to do is give you a quick background, and we'll talk about objectives, research, and results, and we'll conclude. So looking at the tomato production in Florida is quite different. Most of the tomatoes are grown in the field. They're harvested and brought into the packing house where a mixture of water and chlorine to sanitize the tomatoes to remove the food safety concerns is added, and then they are packed. This is what is called dump tank or the waste stream. The amount of water used ranges depending upon which tomato is grown, which tomato variety is grown, and also the size of the packing houses. It can be up to 95,000 liters per day. There's another water that also requires disposal that results from cleaning operations and the packing houses. Okay, so this is a waste stream or a dump tank, which is very typical in most Florida packing houses. That you see a stream of tomatoes which are continuously added with water and chlorine. The total amount of water that requires disposal is around 120 million liters per season. There are two seasons in Florida. This amount is also available seasonally around 4 to 6 weeks in one season. Looking at a survey that was done a couple of years ago, most of the packers, they discharge around 47% of the water go back into the spray fields. Another 27% is discharged in the municipal sewers. Another 13% goes into the septic tanks. Some of the issues that they were having over the years is urban growth. The packing houses are too close to urban areas, so they have to move the waste away from those areas. And with the Florida regulations also need approved locations, the disposal cost, that's the main issue. And we will have the new EPA, numeric nutrient criteria values, that are also going to further push what's being discharged. Some of the information that we didn't know was what exactly are the contaminants of concern. And when the wastewater is applied, there has been speculations with concerns with phosphorus and copper and zinc leaching. So we wanted to look at those. The overall goal was to see how we can manage this wastewater in a sustainable way. Two objectives, characterization and looking at the leaching. So the first objective, the fairly simple methods, we went to packing houses and began collecting samples before they started dumping tomatoes. And then we collected, we standardized, we collected after 10-minute intervals, and then we realized that we were getting with lot many samples than we can handle. So we pushed those 10 minutes to 30 minutes intervals. We conducted four sampling events in each packing house to get a handle on the variability, and we analyzed these samples for various contaminants. What you see in this table in the first column is the fresh water that's before adding tomatoes. In the Florida tomato packing houses, the pH in the wastewater is controlled between 6.5 to 8, and so is the chloride level. Free chlorine level has to be around 150 to 200 ppm and to avoid concerns with salmonella and other pathogens. So what you see in the next column is wastewater from the one packing house, and that's from another two packing house. The pH was not an issue because, as I said, they control it. The biggest issue was with chloride, which was much more higher than you would expect, and you see four times increase in one packing house. And it's also because the management practices are quite different between the packing houses. And in this case, we suspect because they were manually monitoring the chlorine levels. So that resulted in some error, and in the packing house too, it was a computer, so apparently computers were doing a little bit better job than the manual control. We looked at the phosphorus and all the 19 trace metals. The one that you don't see listed, arsenic, they were not in the wastewater because there is no source, so they shouldn't be there. What we saw was an increase in phosphorus and copper, which was higher than the surface water quality standards. And some of the surface water bodies also have quite different values in Florida, depending upon where they are. And we saw that the phosphorus was much higher in one packing house, the same deal that had the auto, that had the manual control. However, the copper levels were very similar. So from this point onwards, we figured out that phosphorus and copper are two main metals that needs to be taken care before this water can be disposed or could be done. So just this slide, I wanted to bring the issue of that the higher concentration in the packing house one, we think, were due to because the tomatoes stayed in the waste stream much longer, about twice as much as the packing house two, and depends upon the variety and so many other factors, how fast they are packed, where they are going to. And we think it was because of the more interaction of tomatoes with the dump tank water. And in this case, there was less interaction. Looking at the sources of phosphorus, because we grow all the tomatoes with the tarpaulin, so there are beds which are covered with the tarp. So we were trying to figure out what could not be the source. So then we thought that the soil particles probably are very less likely to get on the tomatoes. And then we went back to the horticulture best management practices, and we saw that there are many pesticides that actually contain phosphorus. So we think that they are probably dissolving in the water and they are increasing phosphorus. Okay, looking into the leaching of phosphorus, because we figured out that phosphorus and copper are main issues. So I'm just going to talk about phosphorus, copper, and zinc from this point onward. What we did was we packed these soil columns, and if you are aware, with Florida, we have sandy soil, so it's very hard to get the undisturbed soil columns. And secondly, because tomatoes are also grown in beds, so the first couple centimeters are also disturbed. So we wanted to be as close as possible. And then the third reason was we wanted to get a good handle on the hydrologic flow, because that's the main issue with any column study. You need to know the hydrologic control, otherwise your treatments can be all over the place. So we packed these columns based on the field bulk density, which took quite a bit of time, and then we standardized with the DI water till we had the uniform drainage volume in all the columns. So soil properties, moderately acidic, organic matter higher and low as we suspect. Aluminum was higher at the lower depth, which could be a good thing. And calcium and iron as well. So we set up these columns in a greenhouse, four treatments, and we picked three application rates of wastewater, and what we call low is around 0.87 centimeters per day. And we got some help from the Florida Department of Environmental Protection guidelines on what could be the ideal rate for some other wastewater. So we based this number close to those regulations. And we also had a control where we applied the same amount of water as our medium treatment. And we conducted this experiment for 30 consecutive days. And I was saying, because the wastewater supply is only seasonal, around 4 to 6 weeks, so we wanted to be as consistent as possible in the greenhouse. Okay, looking at the main drainage volume, even though at these levels we were covering 79 to 92% of the water up to 50 centimeter depth, looking at the mean concentrations, these are the mean values over 30 consecutive events. You see that the pH decreased in the medium and high treatment, and that's because the wastewater had a pH of 6. So that's why it was lower. The EC was higher, and it increased as the wastewater amount increased. Again, wastewater had high chloride and EC. So, and when we looked at the phosphorus, copper, and zinc, we actually saw that the overall the losses are actually less in the low and medium treatment and then the high, and I'm going to talk about what we think might be happening. And so with the copper, very similar numbers, whether it's DI water or the wastewater. However, in case of zinc, we saw that those values were higher, but again, very similar across all the application rates. Okay, so looking at the chloride breakthrough, we separated the flow into three phases, and what we think was happening, because we equilibrated these columns with the DI water, so as we began irrigating with wastewater at this point, this was the pre-event water that was stored in the columns, that was it was displaced, and that's why you see almost no chloride. And the second phase was a mixture of pre-event water and wastewater flow. As wastewater continued displacing that pre-event water, we saw an increase in chloride. And in the phase three, it was mostly wastewater flow at this point onward. Now, comparing that with the phosphorus breakthrough curve, if you look at the black line, which is the control treatment. So that was the deionized water, which continuously desorbed phosphorus. And when you look at the water soluble, this is at 1 to 10 ratio. And this was continuously quite high soluble phosphorus. When we looked across other treatments, at first we were confused that what's going on really. But because if you look at the water chemistry, has a great influence on phosphorus leaching, for example. And we looked at the high ionic strength, for example. And wastewater also had calcium. So when you have those co-ions which are added at the same time, they have the high potential to retain phosphorus. And we think that's what was happening, which was quite surprising. We didn't expect that. Now, looking at the copper and zinc, in case of copper, the wastewater concentration was about 0.66, and all our concentrations were lower, which means that in the wastewater treatments, copper was retained. In fact, what was interesting was the low treatment actually had higher levels in the beginning. And if you recall the previous hydrologic flow separation, this is the phase one is the actually pre-event water. And we think it's the DIE water that's actually desorbing copper. And I forgot to put the copper values, but I can't seem to remember. And that's what we were thinking what was going on. And in case of zinc, same story in the beginning. And secondly, if you look at zinc adsorption and desorption, I think it had to do something with the amount of water that we were adding, the anaerobic and anaerobic conditions, and that was probably causing reductive solubilization of some of the zinc minerals. And all the copper concentrations at 50 centimeter, the water table in Florida is a couple of feet, so we are not too far. And if we're looking at the drinking water, although some said it's a very crude way to compare because we're not really drinking, but we wanted to see what are the levels and very, very low. So to summarize, the copper was already retained and the soils were already rich. And with the tomatoes that we grow, we put a lot of copper fungicide. So it's not surprising that we have high copper concentrations. In case of zinc, we saw that there was an infective release from the soil. It doesn't matter what you're putting on. So to conclude, what can be done with this water, if you remember the pie graph where 27% of the water goes in the municipal sewers, this water needs to be treated for phosphorus and copper. And some of the potential treatment options could be because phosphorus and copper, you can quickly adsorb them with some of the chemical amendments. So we didn't look at this, but that has the potential to help in that pursuit. And potential sources, it's probably fungicides. We have no evidence on this. We even don't know if there were any soil particles, but we suspect them anymore. And with the copper, especially the copper fungicides, there are a whole list of fungicides that are applied on tomatoes, and that's what we think it is. So looking at the land application issues, we think that it can be safely applied if you are aiming for low or medium. Well, one of the issues could be the long-term application. Is it going to enrich all the phosphorus or copper fixation sites that you will start seeing the breakthroughs in groundwater? And in some situations, because the wastewater has high chloride and EC, so salt-sensitive crops needs to be, this issue needs to be addressed. But again, because we get so much rainfall in Florida, and most of the salts eventually get washed, so it might not be an issue. High application rate definitely will increase leaching losses. And would like to acknowledge EPA for funding this project and appreciate the cooperation from Florida Tomato Committee and packing houses. And let me know if you have any questions, or here's my email.